cast terminal. And when we're taking turns talking, we don't have to just wait for the microphone. If you just want to speak up, that's fine, since mostly it's just us in here. So a couple of notes about the agenda. If you need that to be resent, you can, but it's also up on the screen there. It's going to be very busy today. We're going to go till about 6. We have a couple of breaks built in, as usual. We'll take a lunch break at noon for an hour. We'll go into closed session at 1 o'clock, and at 2 o'clock we'll be meeting with the board and Rod and Peter. And then when the registries come in later on this afternoon, we're going to do that in closed session as well, since there are a couple of sensitive issues. And Matt's worked out a method for us to basically just have one door open and you know, make sure that it's just us in here. All right. With regard to the microphone, I covered that already. Tim, did you want to say anything about the Adobe Connect?
Yeah. It really would be helpful if you want to log in to the Adobe Connect. The link for it is on the ICANN schedule for today for the registrar constituency meeting. If you go to the high bandwidth link, you'll see a nice camera view of the stage and possibly a view when you're speaking. And it's a good way to raise questions or raise your hand and make sure that we know that you're in the queue for things or that Matt Mason knows.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Matt's going to be watching the chat room to make sure that anybody who's participating remotely has an opportunity to talk or be heard. When we have guests, I think what we'll do is just the first couple of rows right down here, if we can keep those clear, that'd be good so that everybody has a place to sit. We're going to keep a few of these seats up here open as well, so if anyone has a presentation, they can do that. All right, let's start with a roll call if we could. We'll start with Matt.
Matt Serlin, Mark Monitor, the secretary of the stakeholder group.
Hello. Adrian Kinderis, Oz Registry Group, thank you, and GNSO Council Rep. Mason, I'd like to take this opportunity to update my statement of interest. Oz Registry International, which is a subsidiary of the Oz Registry Group, recently... observer status in the registry stakeholder group. So Oz Registry International is an observer to the registry stakeholder group. So I will email out the list my updated statement of interest. Thanks.
Jeffrey Eckhouse, ENOM and treasurer of the stakeholder group.
Mason Cole, oversee Los Angeles, chair of the stakeholder group.
Jean Castelvigne, EuroDNS, Vice Chair of the Stakeholder Group.
Tim Cole, Chief Registrar Liaison, ICANN.
Mike Zupke, ICANN staff.
Clark Walton, Advocate for the Registrar Stakeholder Group.
Tom Barrett, NZRCA.
Gretchen Olive, CSC Corporate Domains.
Steve Mihalovich, Safe Names.
Rick Dane is with ENOM.
Tara Naidu, ENOM.
Sangeeta Narasimhan, Network Solutions.
Tatiana Khramsov from RU Center.
Andrei Vorobyov from Center.
Yuri Morievich, Interlink from Japan.
Colleen Askvig, National Arbitration Forum.
Christine Doreen, National Arbitration Forum.
Rob, if you could run faster, that'd be good. Thanks.
Steiner Grether Core.
No?
You know, actually, Rob, let me stop you for a second. If the registrars want to sit down closer, it's probably going to make things more efficient when we pass the microphone around, so yeah. Come on down.
Ollie Hope, Domain Monster.
Matt Mansell, Domain Monster.
Pete Osmond, Domain Monster.
Alex Redner, UPAC.
Mario Pescher, Internet Revox.
Oh, I already got you, did I? Yeah, sorry.
Katrin Ulmer, Dot Berlin.
Stefan Legner, PSI USA, InternetX.
Fritz Siegmann, InternetWire.
James Bladel, GoDaddy.
Tim Ruiz, GoDaddy, and Registrar Rep on the GNSO Council.
Rob Coghill, Grip MBT.
Adam Eisner, Two Cows.
Peter Larsen, Larsen Data.
Paul Diaz, Network Solutions.
Staten Hammock, Network Solutions.
Susan Prosser, Domain Tools.
Markus Frey, Core Council of Registrars.
Frederic Guimau, Mail Club.
Bob Mountain, Name Media.
Nick Dallas, Register.com.
Kaylee Nalem, Black Knight.
Bill Mushkin, Name.com.
John Berryhill, iRegistry.com.
Rob Hall, Momentus, and I'm your nomination committee rep. Did anyone come in that I missed? Okay, that's it.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, good job, Rob. Wait. I'm not doing it every time, though.
Yeah, take $2 out of petty cash. In case you haven't heard the news, by the way, Stefan Van Gelder, our other GNSO rep, I don't know where he is, but yes, he's sleeping. Yeah, he's sleeping because he's celebrating his win as chair-elect of the GNSO Council. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Tell him to take a bow when he comes in. All right, thanks. Tim, let me turn it over to you and Mike for your part of the agenda, please.
I'm going to turn it over to Mike first. He's got the first topic here. We're already ahead of ourselves on the schedule.
All right, thank you. It's a tough position. I feel like I've got an obligation to warm up the crowd, but I didn't bring any of my good material, so I'm sorry. what I am here to talk about is the registrar training program that we've been working on. For those who aren't real familiar, in the 2009 RAA, one of the components that was in those amendments was a requirement that all registrars undergo training of their primary contact person or a designee for that registrar. And so we've developed, under this, we're required to develop this in consultation with the registrar. So we've been working on that for some time. You may recall that in Seoul we had a brainstorming session with registrars, and then in Nairobi we had some discussion with registrars, and we got some feedback about the outline that we had developed. In Brussels we provided a sample module that we had a session with registrars and discussed that. And since then we've developed scripts for just about all of the modules and had feedback from several registrars. And in particular, I would like to just acknowledge the contributions of Kaylee Nalon, Stefan Van Gelder, and Adam Eisner, who have been really helpful in giving us feedback on the scripts that we've written. And I know that it wasn't an easy task. They're fairly lengthy and a lot of pages. I don't think they're going to be so long that they're unmanageable, but that I know it can be sort of a daunting thing when you've got a lot of other obligations. And I know that registrars and really everybody in the community has been pretty active with a lot of stuff going on right now. So just want to say thank you to those three in particular for their help. By way of substance, the training program is going to have a unit on, sort of introduction to the training, how it works. There will be a unit on the transfer policy, a unit on the UDRP section called dealings with registrants, which sort of outlines registrants' rights and responsibilities and kind of the way that registrars have interaction with those. We've got a unit on who is and other sorts of data management issues, including data escrow, and finally a section on RAA enforcement and administration, which is probably one of the shorter units, but things that everybody should know if you're a registrar. So we've got pretty much all the scripts developed. The only one that's still kind of in the works is the introduction. That's just because it's got some sort of technical components about how to use the actual software, and we're still kind of getting all that nailed down. The form of this will be an online thing for those in the U.S. and probably other countries if you're familiar with sexual harassment training that a lot of organizations require. It's sort of along those lines. So, you know, if you've done that, I think I've probably been through 100 of those. So we've got now just a couple of pieces left. We're doing our final review. We're going to have an internal beta testing of that. Then we're going to put it on a hosted platform that will do things like automating the enrollment of registrars and monitoring compliance. Our goal in that is really to, you know, make this as non-labor intensive as possible for our compliance team, so that, you know, they can focus on, you know, some higher priority topics. In terms of where, you know, that's kind of where we are. By way of the way forward, as I said, we've got this beta testing. I expect that we'll probably, come back to registrars, within the next month or so, asking for volunteers who are interested in helping us with the beta testing. I don't know if you're warmed up enough yet, but I was wondering if I could get kind of a show of hands if there's interest by any registrars in participating in that beta testing. Okay, this is good. We were sort of nervous that, you know, there'd either be a lot of interest or no interest. So I'm glad to see there's a good amount. like I say, probably, I don't want to promise in December because the end of the year happens so quickly, but probably early January you'll hear from us and, you know, by way of a message to the registrar constituency stakeholder group, asking for volunteers. So. I think we should be live with the training program by San Francisco, at least in English, and hopefully with translated versions, you know, either about the same time or, you know, shortly thereafter. So hopefully I've given you everything, but if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Questions? Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Do you want those volunteers to send you a note, or did you get who raised their hands?
No, so you know, for that, I think, we'll come back to you by email. So watch the stakeholder group's email list. And if you're interested, you know, we'll have you come forward. That way, I think it's probably the most efficient. Thanks. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Tim?
Yeah, thank you, Mason. I just wanted to update you on the registrant rights and responsibilities document. I noticed that Brian Peck is also in the room. He's dialed in from Marina Del Rey.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tim, let me interrupt you quickly. Matt, we have a couple of folks on the line.
Yeah, there's actually only one person on the phone line. It's Morgan Sackett.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Tim, sorry.
Yep, no problem. similar to what Mike was talking about, we also have a registrar consultation required before we can post this registrant rights and responsibilities document. The team that worked on this through the GNSO and ALAC and so forth put forward the document that had been worked on. I think McKaylee knows some background on the work that went into that because I think he co-chaired the group that worked on that from that end. We are under the impression, I think, that will be split out from the motion it was presented in to be voted on by the GNSO tomorrow. Assuming they vote to encourage the, you know, consultation with the registrars at this stage, we would want to start that so that we could get that document posted in the near future. So again, we're coming to you to say, if you have a preferred means for us to do that consultation, or if you want to do it similar to the to what we did with the training program, we could just ask for volunteers, and we could then send it around and just have a dialogue about that. I don't know. Others have been working on that. I don't know if McKaylee, you want to make any comments about it. I don't think it's a terribly controversial document, but. Is the mic somewhere available for? I put you on the spot, but you know.
Not much to really say about it. It's pretty straightforward. As part of the 2009 RAA, there is a particular subsection which refers to the drafting of a registrant's rights and responsibilities document, which is based on registrants' rights and responsibilities that are both in the RAA and in existing consensus policy. So the document is basically an amalgamation of existing consensus policy. There's nothing new. Yeah, we've already all agreed to it. So it's just a matter of collecting it up and putting it into one document and trying to make it edgeable, I suppose.
Right. You know, when those of you that I think Tim, you have a question or a comment?
I was just going to say that I've been asked by a couple different registrars about that because they were concerned, but I think what happened was they were reading the aspirational charter as a part of that, and that is not a part of what we're talking about. So when you look at that, if you see the aspirational charter, those are some things that were discussed that were sort of a wish list, if you will. That'll be looked at separately. So all we're talking about is just the actual charter of existing rights.
Yeah, and I think Tim and Mason, some of you will recall that when we were actually working over the wording for that section, that amendment, the point of putting the consultation in was to make sure that we didn't end up with a document like that that wasn't, you know, didn't address what was actually in the contract, I think. So I think the consultation at this point is mostly a formality because I think there's been a lot of involvement already, but we still want to do it the right way. And I started to mention before that Brian Peck would be heading that up and getting it ready, and he's going to be following the meeting today here too. So are there any questions about that? We'll be coming back to you shortly and just saying, asking for any volunteers that want to review it, and then we'll see where it goes from there. We also just had a slot on here for additional other business. First of all, I'd like to see if there are any questions or concerns that you guys have for me or my team, if you have anything you want us to be addressing. Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to – there's a couple things I wanted to just highlight. To remind you that RADAR now has a section for you to put your officers and directors. Most of you have done that. But we really need to get those filled out before compliance starts doing audits on them. So please get your officers and directors loaded into RADAR as soon as you can so that we can report a good progress with that. Other than that, I don't think we have too many hot topics right now. I don't know. We had a slight conflict, and I'm wondering if I could turn some of my time over for the IANA slot.
Sure.
If Elise, are you available now? So if you can come up here. I'm going to introduce Elise Gerlach. She's a new vice president at ICANN. She's not really new now, but she's been she's new since the last meeting anyway. And she's going to give you a little bit of her background, and then she wanted to talk briefly about the imminent introduction of IPv6. So
good morning,
now,
Stefan.
They'll have the slides from there, but I don't know. Do you have the clicker or do you yeah. Well, that does us a lot of good up there, Matt.
Let's have a quick round of applause for our new GNSO chair.
He's walking in light like he's Juan Valdez there. Look at you.
Nice. Well done, Stefan. Elise, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Oh, good, I am. The microphone is on. My name's Elise Garrick, and I joined ICANN as the VP IANA in May. So I've in my sixth month, and it's been a very interesting learning curve. What I had done previously before joining ICANN is a variety of things. I was at Juniper Networks for 9.5 years as a senior product manager and director of product management. And then prior to that, I was director of operations at a network, At Home Networks. Oh, thank you. And we built the national backbone for the cable companies in North America before they decided to build their own. And previous to that, I was at Merit Networks. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's a consortium of state-funded universities in the state of Michigan. And we had the grant from National Science Foundation to build the National Science Foundation network, the first T1 network and T3 network, which evolved to become the current internet as we know it today. So I've had a variety of experiences, and I'm really quite pleased to have been asked to join ICANN as the VP of IANA. So we have behind me, oh, it's down there. It's behind me and in front of me, and hopefully you all can see it. What we wanted to talk about today is, I don't think this is the right one, but that's okay, never mind. One of the reasons that I'm here is to talk about the transition to IPv6 and something that the registrars can help to make that a more easy transition and more transparent to the users. So basically, all the IPv4 addresses are soon to be allocated. This last week, actually, we gave out 4/8s, which means we're now down to a pool of only 2/8s remaining before we kick into the global policy with the regional internet registries, which means that we'll give out the last 5. So as you can see, there'll be no more IPv4 addresses for the IANA to allocate to the regional internet registries. And based on their projections, they don't expect to have IPv4 addresses available after 2012. So we'll run out, the IANA will run out, soon within the early months of 2011, and then the regional internet registries will be out of addresses shortly thereafter. Now, everybody has speculated on what that's going to mean, but just a few statistics. Basically, there's 7 billion people on the globe or thereabouts, and if you were to say how many IPv4 addresses are available for each unique person, there's only 3.7 IPv4 addresses available. So if we say we take the application of mobile phones and texting over mobile phones, that would mean that basically only half the population could have an IPv4 address to text on their mobile phone. So IPv6 is the way to go because there's like gazillions and bazillions of them. The number gets really large. The number that gets handed out to ISPs, the minimum allocation from the regional internet registries, is a /48. That translates, I think you heard Rod say it in his speech, translates to 1.2 septillion, which is 24 zeros or 8 commas. So it's a lot. So what can the registrars do? There's something called GLUE, DNS GLUE, and it's already implemented for IPv4, but what needs to be implemented is IPv6 GLUE. And the reason you want this is that if you want your users to be able to resolve their IPv6 addresses using DNS, you have to have IPv6 GLUE. So basically what happens, the slides are trying to work this out. Maybe I should just ask for a show of hands. Who knows what GLUE is, DNS GLUE? So I don't need to explain it to you. So anyway, without IPv6 GLUE, basically you can't resolve a name properly. With the GLUE, you can. You get a V4 address and a V6 address. So what does this mean? It means that this is something you can do in preparation, and we would certainly encourage you to do it sooner rather than later. And some of the problems that could happen for a registrar is, well, you may decide not to do it, saying there's not really a very large deployment at this point in time of IPv6, so there's no big rush. However, if you do have some sites that are trying to be reachable via V6, or some users who are using V6 that want to get to some of the sites that your registrants have put up there, some servers, without it, it will break and your customers will be unhappy. So it's probably behooves you to make sure that you have the infrastructure in place. And that's really the only add I want to make for IPv6 and the things that you can help to do to make the transition for users and registrants easier to move from IPv4 to IPv6. And I appreciate the opportunity I've been given to introduce myself to this group. This is my first introduction to the registrars, and thank you for your time. I've been asked to ask if there are any questions. Any questions?
It could just be about any aspect of IANA, too, because she knows it all.
And if I don't, I'll still claim I'm a newbie until the next meeting. Would I mind explaining a little bit the glue? Okay. Let me see if I can back up. Oops. I guess I can't back up. So anyway, what happens is if you have a request for a domain name. Oh, here. I can back up. I'll try and step through it because Leah Vagoda, who has been at the IANA for quite a long time, I don't know if any of you have been in contact with Leo. He's really the IP expert within the IANA team, and he's been very helpful in putting together these slides. So basically, what you have is you want to get to a destination, and it could be any destination, www.something. And you go and you ask the name server. And so you ask the name server, where is this website? So that's the arrows pointing to the left. Okay, so without the glue, it tells you to go ask a specific name server. But you say, oh, I don't know where that name server is. So then you send another query and you say, okay, tell me how to get to this name server. And it tells you to go ask that name server again. So now you're in a recursive loop. It's basically you don't know how to resolve the name that you've requested from the name server. So, however, if you have put the glue in for IPv6 like you have for IPv4, there will be a binding. Am I doing it wrong? Someone's shaking their head.
I'm sorry, I have to disagree.
Okay, I'm happy to have you disagree. I'm not an expert in this area.
Basically, there's two different things here. Setting up and creating Quad A records so that you can reach your website over IPv6. Mm-hmm. You do not need to have IPv6 glue records to do that.
Really?
Yes, really, you don't. I serve several websites mm-hmm. off our network. We do not have IPv6 glue, and they will work perfectly well over IPv6. You can do a Traceroute 6 or a Ping 6, do any of those host names, and they will work fine.
But if someone is requesting you to resolve to an IPv6 destination, they're on IPv6, you won't be able to get to them.
Well, that's a problem further down the road. At the mm-hmm. point where you have people who are only using IPv6, right. Then the glue records on IPv6 become more important. So, for example, if you're an IPv6 geek at the moment and you want to have mm-hmm. pure IPv6, you're going to dual stack your name servers.
Right.
But to say that you will not be able to reach a Quad A record without IPv6 glue isn't actually correct, as you can.
So I was trying to say if you were using IPv6, you wouldn't be able to get there. So it's
not entirely true, but that's not really the case at the moment.
We're preparing for the future. And the future is there will be people with only IPv6.
Yeah, but the problem at the moment is actually getting registrars and ISPs to actually support standard Quad A records and allowing them to put in the Quad A records at one level plus being support for glue records for those who actually want to do it. But by making it sound like there is no way to reach a Quad A record without the IPv6 glue isn't entirely correct.
Right, I probably did exaggerate the danger there. I'm sorry about that. But I appreciate your clarification. I do think, however, it is a good thing for registrars to know that this is a capability that they would want to have in place in order to enable the use of IPv6 connectivity for the users who will be using IPv6. So
I'm happy to have any other challenges and qualifications. Okay, and thank you very much for your time.
Okay, anything else for Elise? Thank you, Elise, for joining us. Tim?
I think we're ahead of schedule here, because unless anybody has any other concerns or questions for the liaison group. Yeah. Stefan says it's time for drinks.
Okay, so we have about 10 minutes before Akram and Kevin join us. So there's an issue that Adrian wanted to address. Yeah. Okay, there's something Adrian wants to address. So let me turn the floor over to him for just a bit.
Stop doing that. Yeah. So it's not so much an issue, just, it could be an issue if we don't do something about it, but we want to take a few minutes today to talk about membership. It sort of dovetails into a couple of different conversations, but there's a real problem here about potentially stagnating within the registry stakeholder group, and I think we need to be looking at ways with which we can drive membership into different areas around the globe, particularly within the Asia Pacific region, within South America. I think we're very well represented in North America, and that's great. And I think the genesis of the internet and ICANN and everything else had a large part to do with that. But if we're going to survive and prosper as a group and get many differing opinions and interest, then we need to really start looking at how we drive membership. And so what I wanted to do today was, in some way try and have a conversation around how do we do that, how do we define the benefits of this group, how do we do some outreach such that we can start getting some new members, some new faces, some new opinions in the room. Not that I don't value yours. Applause here. No. Is anyone listening? Am I on? Yeah. Hello? Mason, I'm not sure exactly how you want to go about having the discussion. I can sort of bring up some ideas that we had around what I think will drive membership as a start, if you like, and we can make some discussion around that. Great.
Stan.
Do we do any outreach now? Do we have a list of registrars around the world who have contacts and we send them emails and invite them to come to the meetings? Are we proactive on that now?
Yeah, we do that. Oh, onto it, okay. We do that now. We have had a sort of tepid response to those. I think one of the best ways is through a lot of people here have friends and colleagues that know these other registrars, and I think a good way is if we do a personal outreach to those people. I don't want to send out a list saying, hey, these are the people that, as a treasurer, I know who's, paid their membership dues. But I don't think that's really the part of it. It's not the actual fees, which is always nice that we do need some more funding. But I think it's the actual participation. One of the main issues, I don't know if Adrian, he doesn't want to go into the details, but a lot of us are getting close to being term limited. And we need to have new people, new participation. And especially we do need geographic diversity, which we really don't have at this moment. For the next round of people coming up. So if you know people who are working in Asia Pacific specifically is where we'd love to have some more input, because their needs are different than the people in North America. So if you work with registrars there or have contacts there, reach out to them, explain to them if they're here, try and bring them into the building, speak to any one of us, I think would be a great start.
I was just responding directly to this question. I went to the ICANN regional meeting in Tokyo and did a presentation on the registrar stakeholder group then. And, there's a lot of registrars in the room, clearly from Asia, that had very little understanding of what we did. Certainly were interested, but, for them it's all, they've got to pay dues. They want to see what the value proposition is. So I think we need to do a lot of work internally, and I've got some ideas which we can go through once we've answered the questions, but on how we can build in value, what do you guys want out of your membership? Because if we can achieve what you guys need, then hopefully that translates and out to what others need as well.
Tom Barrett.
Colin.
K.
Keller, not Tom Barrett. Sorry.
Can we pass it? Pass it back via Tim. Behind you. He's behind you.
Thank you. I guess one of the questions we really have to address if you want to enlarge the community, especially into the Asian realm, is the language problem. A lot of the people don't speak English as good as most of the people in this room, and it's really hard for them to actually translate any of the documents they have. I mean, even for us who have been around quite a while, I mean, most of these cryptic sheets of data we get, you know, it's hard to comprehend. And for people that don't really have an idea or totally understand why they don't appreciate what we do, how we do it, and why they should be involved. And since this is an emerging market and a lot of people coming on, I don't know whether we should ask ICANN for funds to get translation of our documents into the 6 ICANN languages or something like that. But my personal view is that I don't think that we as a group will be able to actually put up the money to make all the translation work that has to be done.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great idea. And I know that one of the benefits that I was talking about wanting to introduce was, you know, we have Clark now, and as a small business, as you know, the majority of registrars are, I think it would be very beneficial with, you know, all this heaps of information pouring down out of ICANN, if we can act as a distiller of that information and try to create simple language around what's going on. If that means translating it as well, then that, you know, I think is a benefit. So, you know, one of the things we were talking about within the website was providing a, and you know, we don't know whether this is logistically possible or anything at this point, but to create a forum where, you know, this information was readily available but simplified. Because that, for me, as a, you know, if you're a small registrar, that's value right there. I'll pay my $500 a year because I'm going to, you know, be able to not have to hire somebody that's going to be my policy officer. I'm going to get the clear bits of information I need and be brought up to speed quickly. So that was just one of the things. And I think you're right. I think the language barrier is huge. If we're going to do outreach and we're going to be fair dinkum about it, if we're going to... Not an Australian word. If we're going to be real about it, then you know, breaking the language barrier is important.
That's a good point, Tim Ruiz.
Yeah, I think coffee at these meetings would be a big incentive to me. But anyway,
yeah,
and maybe some biscuits or something as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One thing I was thinking was that. You know, the first contact, you know, that registrars have is with ICANN, and the last contact once they become accredited. So if there was something we could do, some kind of communication that we could do through that, through ICANN at that point, I think would add some legitimacy to us so that when they first hear about us, you know, it's not, you know, just some rogue group or something, who knows, but that they hear it from ICANN so they realize that, you know, this is a real group. It actively participates in ICANN and whatever other benefits that we could espouse. And then I wonder, too, if there isn't some sort of added value that ICANN could offer for membership in this constituency. For example, if it's pretty evident that members of this constituency are very seldom, if ever, compliance problems, then is there some sort of accreditation fee break, or who knows, that ICANN might be able to offer as a member of the stakeholder group.
Yeah, and I think that's come up a few times, Tim, when we've had compliance in the room and, you know, they're preaching to us and we say, well, you know, there's not that many bad actors, you know, in this room. We're not the ones you need to be talking to. But I think that's right. If we can sort of say that that there is some kudos in joining the registry, our registrar constituents, if I do that again, kick me. Then there's some breaks with ICANN. I think the other part that we had listed here was about having some sort of welcome pack that went out at the same time as becoming accredited, and something that was a little bit more marketing based and really, you know, spoke to the value that I keep coming back to. Then you know, that might be something that starts making it feel real and see that there is some value there. And I've offered the resources of my marketing team within my organisation to take a look at what we could pull together. But, you know, we're still embryonic in those discussions. But we'd love to hear some more ideas from the floor, if there are any.
Stefan?
Yeah. Yeah, so the question was, what did I hear back from the guys in Asia about my presentation? They had questions. They weren't sure about what it meant to be. They were ICANN accredited, but they didn't see, for them, why do I need to be part of this group? And I told them it's about having voice and being able to, you know, control your destiny to a little bit, not be at the mercy of others. And they feel somewhat distant, and I think it might even be either cultural or language-based from what's going on. They know they have to be accredited because that gives them the cheap domain names, right? They can go direct by wholesale. But outside of that, as far as getting involved in policy and getting involved in shaping the future, they didn't see any real relevance. So I think it's about trying to break that down and let them know that that's actually something you can do by degrees. It seems very intimidating for them. And that's certainly the feedback I got. And I just tried to say, well, even if it's only a matter of listening in at a start, you know, that's something. Or voting on a registrar constituency point or stakeholder group point. You can build that up as you go on and then raise your level of participation to the XCOM or whatever, but it is important that you have a voice.
Stefan?
Thanks. Yeah, I think a lot of it is actually education, to be honest, if I can use that word. Coming back to what Tom said, I think there is a real language barrier, but I'm not sure the language barrier is English versus most of the world. I think the language barrier is the ICANN language and the way we do things here. If you look at the agenda, just a third item down, anyone coming into this room and reading PDNR, RAA, I mean, who is? Most people might know what it is, but certainly IRTP audit and such like. It's just, you know, we speak our own language. And one of the things that I think are really, our members do have benefits. I'm not sure, for sure we can work on providing them with more benefits, but we should also work on making sure people understand what benefits there are as it stands. And one of the things that, you know, I was kind of recruited to this group, if you can call it that, during one of the regional outreach meetings. I think they're extremely important. And the reason that I took an interest was that our then chair, John Nevitt, was there. And he was there taking the time to explain to the group that was there what goes on in the stakeholder group and why being a member is actually good for your business, because you understand the issues, you're closer to them. You know, if ICANN decides to change something, then you know about it. So I think a lot of it is also just emphasizing what's there in front of us already. In a way that people can understand it. And, you know, it may be translating stuff or it may be just explaining stuff.
Matt?
What about some sort of monthly webinar where new accredited registrars basically get a webinar that gives them a tour of ICANN and all the current policy issues, how ICANN set up? You know, it took me 6-odd meetings to understand ICANN. I think if I'd have had that introductory webinar, I'd have felt a good synergy with that group of people and wanted to join, because they would help me navigate getting through it. And then the second question is this a new issue? And is the issue about membership or participation? I wasn't too clear. And if it is about one or the other, why are we seeing a decline, if there is a decline? Do we know?
So, yeah, let me respond to that. So I think in the membership, in the number of paid members, we've been fairly static. It has been a small dip, but it hasn't been that significant. But it has not kept up with the pace of new credentials that are joining, because we're at 950. And granted, a lot of them are, you know, family credentials, but there still are a lot of new registrars coming on board. So we're definitely, as a percentage of total registrars, we've decreased, you know, the paid members, but the absolute number has been fairly static on that point. But I think as these people come on, I think that is probably the most important point, because, Matt, you said it took you a while. I think when somebody comes on and comes on board, we do send them a letter now. You know, Tim has been nice enough to send us, but, I mean, we can't come over. We send them a letter now, but we'd like to have something more significant, you know, it would be nice if, like, when somebody moves into a house, somebody comes over and brings you a pumpkin pie and, you know, welcomes you to the neighborhood. But something here, we'd like to be able to maybe to send them a webinar and send them the link, something along those lines, along with some other documentation, maybe even an ICANN dictionary.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think it's just sending them a webinar. I think it's a monthly presentation to kind of really make them.
And then to have those as podcasts that people could, you know, look at over time and go back and take a look at. I think that's a great idea. I think to answer the question, I think it's membership first and then participation, or even vice versa. They're both concerns for us. And we don't think you participate at the levels of this without being a, you know, well, clearly you can't without being a member. So we want to try to get membership built and then get them actively involved.
I agree, and I think participation is a really big issue. And when you just following the ICANN RC list, it's the same familiar faces that are going around in circles with the same sort of conversation. It's, I guess the question is why are the existing members not participating, even on the simplest of issues? And it's a real concern. I think it's a bit of a stigma around the RC, if I'm honest, that probably needs to be dealt with. I'm not sure how it's dealt with, but maybe that can be dealt with new members coming in and participating.
Yeah, and I think just to wrap up, and can we come back to this today, because I think it's really important, is maybe something you can think about before then is, why are you guys here? What's the benefit to you guys? If you can articulate that to us. Yeah, if it's here just to get the power and the cheese and the cookies and things like that, then that's great. But, you know, if you can tell us why you're sitting in a room today and why you're active, then that's really good information. So we might come back to that a little later today and see what we can get. I know we've got some new guests here.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing this up, and thanks everyone for your ideas. Matt, our secretary, has been taking notes on this, and there were a couple of really good ideas, I think, that came out of that. So thanks for doing that. And maybe if we're playing skee ball with the schedule here a little bit, so if we get an opening a bit later, we'll come back to the issue. But let me welcome Akram Atala and Kevin Wilson. Akram is sorry, you're not on, huh?
This is Juan. Oh,
Juan, I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. Hi, Juan. Excuse me. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And on our agenda, you're going to speak a bit about budgeting for FY12, right?
Right.
Okay. So let me just turn the floor over to you. We have about 30 minutes for you guys.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you, Mason. I'll start and I'll hand it over to Juan. You're getting your mouse set up there. Thank you. Thank you, Mason. Thank you all, everyone. And as I think most of you know, I'm the outgoing CFO. I'll be leaving in January, but I wanted to hand over the reins on the budget development process to Juan Ojeda. And just on a personal note, I just want to say it's been great serving you for the last 3.5 years. And this is, I remember 3.5 years ago, this group being very contentious on the budget. And with Tim and his group working very hard on getting the vote, it's been a great experience to work with you. And
let me interrupt you for just a minute and just say, on behalf of the stakeholder group, thank you very much for all your hard work, and thanks for.
Thank you.
You've been very helpful to registrars and a friend of this stakeholder group. So we just want to say thank you and good luck on whatever comes next.
Yeah, thank you very much. I do appreciate that. And also thank you all for your payments on the behalf of the registrants. I appreciate your payments to ICANN so that we can host meetings like this. So just to cue this up, this group in particular has not been a very big critical element of the budget development process in the last year. That's at least my perception. Other SOs and ACs have had, and other constituency groups within the GNSO have had significant criticism of the process. I mean, there's always been room for improvement. So a lot of this presentation is an education for you to see how the other SOs and ACs have requested certain things, and it's an addressing to that. So if it seems a little out of context, it is. It's by design. It's meant to support those groups. The changes in particular are meant to support. To be clear, to respond to those comments. And in particular, it's asking for more SO and AC involvement, essentially a meeting earlier. As you know, I don't think we've ever talked about the budget at the AGM before formally, directly. And this is the first year we've done that. So we basically moved the budget development process a meeting earlier, and Juan will explain that and how it ties into the strategic plan, which obviously is of concern of yours as well. But anyway, so I just wanted to cue that up so that you can understand that, the context of that. That doesn't mean that the specific suggestions aren't helpful, won't be helpful for you, but I just put it in a context. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. So what we want to share with you are some of the enhancements that ICANN has made, as Kevin said, to its budget development cycle, in the spirit of honoring our commitment to provide an opportunity for SO and AC leadership to provide earlier and more active participation into its development. We also want to clarify the process, again, for the budget development, just generally speaking overall, but specifically how the SOs and ACs, the mechanisms in place for them to provide actual input. Another point we want to cover is to clarify the basic tool set of support services that ICANN is providing to all the SOs and AC leadership, again, just for clarity's sake. And lastly, get your thoughts at the end to ensure that we have a well-thought-out process that we all can agree upon. Whereas previously, the strategic plan and the budget development phase were two distinct six-month processes where the completion of the strategic plan was a prerequisite for the commencement of the budget development phase. Now we've tied in these processes to different ICANN meetings throughout the year. So, for example, the strategic plan now is targeted for completion upon the first ICANN meeting of the fiscal year, being this meeting now. And the strategic plan has been, the draft has been completed, and it's posted for public comment at this period. The next phase, the framework development, will now be tied in to, or its completion will be targeted for the March meeting in San Francisco. And the final phase, which is a draft operating plan and budget, that will be targeted for submission to the board for adoption in the June meeting in Asia. Previously, in prior developments of the budget, SO and ECs provided input only once the framework was posted for public comment. Now, one of the enhancements that we've made is that we've, again, provided a mechanism for earlier input prior to the posting of the framework. So now you will have an opportunity to provide input to its actual development of the framework, not post after the fact. And one final enhancement that I wanted to share with you is that now the SOs and ACs have more input into the different levels of support services that ICANN is providing, again, just for clarity's sake. This graphic, great. Now I just want to make sure you can see. this is a graphic representation of what we're talking about how all three phases of the operating plan are tied into the three ICANN meetings throughout the year. So the yellow arrow representing the strategic plan ties in, its completion ties into the Cartagena meeting, which is where we are now. The green arrow representing, the framework development phase, as you can see, is tied into the San Francisco meeting in June. Again, based on community feedback, asking for more time for SO and AC input into its development, you'll notice that now, rather than waiting for the strategic plan to be completed, there's actually a slight overlap now. So we're beginning the framework process a little bit earlier to expand that timeline to provide more time for active participation. And the last phase, the adopted budget development, is tied into the June meeting in Asia. And again, to allow for more active participation, we will begin beginning this process earlier earlier in the year, again, to provide ample time. And then the starburst periods on each phase is when each of those respective phases will be posted for public comment. So there is an opportunity for feedback and input during those time periods. So the the goal for the framework development is for it to be posted for public comments in February, and the adopted budget will be posted for public comment as per the bylaws by the 17th of May. So now to go over the chain of events that will be taking place from now until the final adoption of the budget. We're currently in the first step where we're finalizing the basic services and processes. What will happen is that once we discuss those, the SOs and ACs will have an opportunity to submit specific requests above and beyond that basic set of tools and services that we're currently providing for any specific study, any particular project that you may require. Once ICANN receives those requests, they will be summarized and they will be included in the framework for posting for public comment. Once we begin the discussion phase after receiving and analyzing the public comments off the framework, we'll begin the drafting, the operating plan and budget, and again, we'll be posting that for public comment by the 17th of May, leading to the final operation plan and budget being forwarded to the board for its approval in the June meeting. Any questions so far?
Yes, we have a question down here, Juan. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. So one of the questions that I think a lot of us have been curious about is people, some of the, especially on the supporting organizations, on there, that those get submitted. Are there any sort of sanity tests, like saying, hey, this, what are they asking for? Is that vetted against, you know, what they asked for last year, what they did with the funding? We're just trying to, I think it's kind of a dark cloud for this group. We don't know what happens and how that process works. And I think, you know, for us, we think, hey, we collect the money from the registrants, we send it in, and then it gets spent. But, you know, and then we see what it's spent on, and a lot of it, you know, we're not sure how that comes up, the money. We see where it's going to. That's not the issue. But how is that process sort of put together on the other groups put in their requests? And then I guess that, I'll leave it at that.
That's a great question, and actually we'll be covering that. It's a perfect segue for the next couple of slides. So I appreciate the introduction. But I agree that is based on the kickoff meetings we had last month. I have heard that feedback. And we're working to provide clarity on the process, provide clarity on the reasons, and provide clarity on its completion. So we'll go over the next couple of slides, and if anything's not clear, we can certainly revisit that. So this is a list of the basic tools and resources that ICANN is currently providing. From secretariat support to subject matter expertise, finance, and legal team support. This is a basic set of services that we'll be providing on an ongoing basis, and no special request is required for these services. We also provide travel support for this particular SO and AC group for fiscal year 11 budget. That's the amount included in the budget, and this is annualized. So if you wanted to get it on a per meeting basis, you can do the math and divide that by three.
If I could just interject, that's the GNSO. That's not just the registrar constituency, just to be clear.
Thank you.
So 23, I think most of you know that there's 23 for the whole GNSO. Okay. Breach meeting.
Very important clarification. Thank you, Kevin. Now, for the process of any of these special services or special requests above and beyond the basic tool set of services, we've developed a mechanism for the communication and for the submission of these requests. First item is that these special requests should be submitted by SO and AC leadership only. That's just for quality assurance purposes, to ensure that there's been a proper review prior to submission. The submissions will be sent via template form, which we'll go over on the next slide, and they should be sent via email to controller@icann.org. Once these requests are received by finance at ICANN, we'll be cost estimating them based on current information that we have available, whether it's if staff support, whether it's outside expertise, telecommunications requirements, what have you. We'll be cost estimating each special request. The initial phase, which we'll go over later on, but the initial phase submission will commence on the 31st of January. Now, we realize that with things changing on an everyday basis, sometimes later in the year that there may be exceptions where there's a particular project or specific service that's been identified by ESOs and ACs that they would like to be included in the fiscal year 12 budget. We will be continuing taking submissions through the end of the final public comment period. But that will be more analyzed more on a case-by-case basis rather than posted for public comments and going through the prioritization process. This is the template that we'll be submitting service specific service requests from. Obviously, the more information that can be provided, the better cost estimating that we can include. On staff support, you can be as specific as possible. If you believe you need one person for secretary of support for this special project, or if there's specific telecom needs that you need, the frequency, if it's monthly, if it's for a two-month period, once a week, what have you. Again, as much information as possible would make it a more efficient process.
The short answer is yes. My understanding is the GNSO Council elected to push this down to the constituency level, and so that's where we're making the presentation. So Chuck and asked us there wasn't a need to discuss this at the GNSO Council level. Is that your question? So is there going to be a specific request for a at the GNSO Council?
Right. If, say, for example, a working group or a PDP is started or begun, will this request be required in order to get staff support for those activities?
To put them in specifically into the FY12 budget development effort, yes. Now, I just caveat that there are other mechanisms to get into the budget. This is specifically an outreach, we've always had that process. Staff understands that you need to have a special working group. They would put that into their departmental budgets already. This is sort of in response to and I haven't heard that in the registrar constituency before, but the response that staff wasn't being responsive. We asked for an SAC retreat, for example, and we just didn't get the funding for that. So we need to have a direct line into finance and the operating plan and operations, COO level, from the SO and AC leadership. So that's what this forum is for, but the general idea could be used for other. That's why I said yes, it would be useful to have this kind of request if generated. But normally, in the ICANN budget development process, staff would identify those and put those in there. Does that help answer your question, Tim? Tim, did that answer your question? Okay, great.
We have a question down here, Ron.
Yeah, sorry, it's Jeff again. Wow, one more question here. One of the things you got, Kevin, you guys missed some of the early discussion we were talking about as registrars, that we were looking for some additional services possibly from ICANN, sort of maybe in translation or some of the other pieces. And I think it would be something that it would be helpful for this group. I think it would expand, you know, the knowledge of the group, which would hopefully lead to lower compliance costs for you guys. Is that something we would request through this template? And then how does that, and then once we do request it, maybe I miss this, but who actually makes those decisions and how do we, you know, is there a request for more input? Could you just walk us through how the decision-making process works and if that's any, my original question, if that's what we would need to request if we wanted additional services.
Thank you, Jeff. So the second part of your question, how do things get prioritized? Who makes a determination? When the submissions are when we receive the submissions on this template form, you'll notice one line item there. We can document the strategic plan impact. The strategic benefit will be one key element. The other key element to it will be once these submissions are included in the framework for public comments, we will be analyzing and reviewing all the public comments. And based on those public comments, there will be a prioritization process based on that feedback. So if there's a particular project that the summary of the public comments is that, yes, this is very beneficial, this is very strategic for the community, and everybody's on board with its inclusion into the budget, then that will be put at the top of the prioritization scale. Obviously, from the framework to the draft budget, there will be some tough decisions that will have to be made in terms of the resources allocated overall and to project specific. But that bright line will be determined through this process. So all of the projects that have ranked higher, if you will, on the prioritization process, the plan is for all those to be included up until we reach that bright line.
Maybe if I could just add to that as well. That's all true. Every year, in every organization, every one of yours, personal household as well, you have your budgets. To give you an idea of what the ICANN world is, typically with a $59 million budget, we get the requests that come in from staff and board and community in the $70, $75 million range. So there's an interesting process of whittling that down to get to a manageable budget that stays within our revenue streams. And so that prioritization process has happened mostly internally with staff, executives, and then we get comments from the community and the public comment process. What we're doing this year, in addition to that, we're committing, as Juan alluded to, of actually showing that list. So you'll see those who read the budget framework first and then the draft, you'll actually see the list where you'll see each request that comes in, and then Jeff, to answer your question, so you'll see where the line is on the ones that are funded and the ones that are not, and then there will be other iterative rounds of comments so that you can, the community can say, hey, staff, you missed it. We need some of the things that fell below the line that didn't get funded need to be, and other ones that might be above the line that were funded, they should be brought down. Hopefully that answers that.
Any other comments, questions? So now to clarify the budget timeline, checkmark indicates events that have already taken place. So in the month of November, we had our initial kickoff meetings with all the community groups. Now in the second bullet, where we're at now in Cartagena, we're continuing these community discussions again to achieve clarity and to receive any comments from the community to create a more enhanced and better thought out process. Upon the completion of the Cartagena meeting, we will be opening up the period for submission of these special requests through the end of January. Once we receive these requests, as I previously mentioned, we will be cost estimating these and including them in the framework for public comment posting in February. That point, from February till March, we will be taking comments on the framework from the public posting and discussing the results of these public comments in the March meeting in San Francisco. Once that's taken place, we will be working then on the draft operating plan and budget for a final period of public comments by the 17th of May, within the goal of submitting a final operating plan and budget to the board for approval in the June meeting.
Okay, we've got just 2 or 3 minutes left here. Questions? Tim, I've got you in a queue. I'll take a queue if anybody else has some. Tim?
If it's a question of once the draft operating plan and budget has been posted for public comment, it'll be more of a question of following up with SONAC leadership. At that point, the budget will be pretty much half-baked, if not 75% baked. So it's a matter of prioritization within the special projects that have already been included in the draft budget. So it'll have to be a decision that will be involving SOS and AC leadership of what is a higher priority, this new special project that just came up. Then where can we, can we scale back on the scope of some of the special requests that have already been included? Does it need to be a complete replacement? How can we make that new special request, if it's of a high enough priority, how can we make that fit into the draft budget that's already been developed?
Any other questions? Okay. Kevin and Juan, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mason. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's 10:15, and time for a... there's something on the phone. Sorry about that. All right, so 10:15, we're going to take a 15-minute break. We'll start promptly again at 10:30.